Yeah, well, let's just before we do the hello. Actually, fuck it. Hello and welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast with me.
Hello.
Your host, Adam Richmond, and joining me as ever, it's Mr. Joe Devine.
Hello.
Hello. This is the Movies You Forgot podcast, the show where we chat about the movies or films that you forgot or we forgot we'd seen in the first place. Mm. This is one of the little fun tidbit episodes.
This is one of the little fun tidbit episodes. Hey.
We're not talking about movies you forgot. We're talking about films we've seen.
We're talking about films you haven't seen yet.
Joe's got a big old list of films you've seen. We've seen movies at the cinema, me and Joe, haven't we?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've seen movies on planes.
Oh, man, we've seen some plane movies. Big time.
Films on a plane.
Yeah.
You know, imagine that, the sequel to Snakes on a Plane.
Yeah, it's much just more relaxing. As it was meant to be, the sky cinema.
But what do you reckon if, from the high concept flick title, movies on a plane, what would happen in that movie? It would be like a Last Action Hero type thing.
No, I think it would be like a sort of sci-fi thing, like a tech experience gone wrong thing, where you get on a plane and then it's like the latest in in-flight entertainment, where instead of just sort of doing a VR experience or something, you get sort of sucked into the plane movie.
That's Last Action Hero.
I don't know what Last Action Hero is.
So why did you say no then?
Because I assumed it wasn't the very specific idea that I had.
Joe's accidentally invented the plot of Last Action Hero on a plane.
Hey, man. Hey, at least I didn't reinvent Top Trumps, okay? I take it back, and instead it would be it was snakes on the plane, except the snakes are made of film, and that's it.
Yeah, green light. So yeah, we've seen movies on planes.
We've seen movies that were meant to be only watched on planes, but were unfortunately watched elsewhere.
And we've just seen movies out of that in our own time. Now, given the runtime, we like to keep a type ship on this podcast.
A type ship? Is that a special
type ship?
Is that like a ship that you get from a typewriter or something? At the Helvetica 11.
So we'll get to Begonia up top. Then we'll do traveling movies, the kind of movies me and you like to watch when we travel.
Yeah.
And how different that makes us.
Yeah. We should say at this point also, oh no, tell you what, I'll save it.
Carry on. Thanks, because I was rattling through the we've never done this before, and then we'll rattle through cinemas. Joe's seen more at the cinema, so that's very much Joe's big feature.
Yeah,
I've only seen
one. I care about cinema more than you. I think that's why I make more of an effort to get out there to the cinema more than you do, and that's the only reason why I've been more. Would you agree?
No, I think you're just playing catch up because, you know, you've started hearing my feature where I just read movie stubs from the past, and you're jealous about me and how my cinematic going, and you're like, I want to get in at the cinema.
That is it. You've rumbled me.
Yes, yeah. Thoroughly rumbled. And but then aside from that, me and Joe have also been seeing movies at home.
Yeah.
Now here's the game.
Uh-huh.
Neither of us can talk about the movies that we've watched outside of those other features.
Uh-huh. So outside of cinema or traveling category.
Yeah, that's, but yeah. Outside those two, that we can't, unless it's a smooth and sexy, tasty segue.
Okay.
And that's the game.
So can I say then, if I feel at any point throughout today's episode, at any point, where there's a clean segue to a separate film I've watched in neither location, neither in the air or in the cinema, then I will talk about it with a segue. It will be you that decides whether my segue was clean or not. Is that the answer? Is that what we're saying?
I think I'm not going to interrupt the podcast.
No, but you'll retroactively decide whether it was allowed or not. And if it wasn't, then you can cut it out.
No. They all stay in. It'll be fun to see how both of us. I mean, I think it's going to be more on me because you've got so many more movies at the cinema because you love cinema more. How each of us tries to sometimes maybe crowbar in a reference to something they've seen. Like, it's really interesting. It's really interesting that you say that about you know, male actors. I saw a movie with a male actor, you know, that kind of crowbar.
It's really interesting you say that about the crowbar, because I recently watched the film The Crow, and that's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, let me just say, what you're doing as a more than capable host, terrific host, by the way.
Here we go.
Fantastic host. Is you're announcing to the audience what is actually going to happen.
Right.
But what I was doing was building some, albeit false, artificial stakes that may help what is going to happen, what you said is actually going to happen, which will happen, feel a bit more exciting, you know? Because what you've done is taken all the stakes away. You've said, well, no, because it will stay in. And no, we'll talk about it anyway. And like, you've said, here's the rules, but then none of the rules really matter.
It's just different tastes, isn't it? I mean, I know you host a podcast and you do you told me what you did before we start recording. What we do on the TFO podcast is we do this. Well, guess what? I'm the host of the Movies You Forgot podcast. And I mean,
that's good confidence, by the way, because last week you were saying you weren't, and I didn't like that. So I'm proud of you for claiming it back.
I'm back.
There he is.
Adam is the host now. The dynamic works better when Adam is the host. Adam prefers to be the host, and Joe prefers to be the participant. It's better overall when Adam is the host, and Joe is the participant. Let it never be spoken of again. The ghost. 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 The ghost.
Well, I have to admit something to you. I think I made a joke immediately after coming out of the cinema when I watched Bugonia. And I sent you a voice note, or I sent you a text message saying, Bugonia, more like Poogonia. And today, when I was looking through my film diary, I realised that I'd accidentally included the title as P. Eugonia. Not because of a joke. I have in fact said several times in conversations since, I've been out at the pub, I've been out after work, people have said, what have you seen recently? I said Pugonia. I've been unironically saying Pugonia because I forgot what this was called.
And it's not a B movie then, is it? It's a P movie.
In my world, it's a P movie, yeah.
So let's do the letterbox for Pugonia. It's the 2025 flick directed by Yorgos Lanthimos of The Lobster fame and Dogtooth fame.
Mygos Lanthimos.
Yorgos, yeah, Yorgos.
Right. I thought he was Yorgos.
No, he's
He's mine.
He's Yorgos.
Right.
It's 118 mins. I'd say 8 to 12 mins too long.
I would say 158 mins too long.
Shut up. It stars Emma Stone, Jesse Plemons.
Stars is quite a strong word, but they are in the film.
Let's lead with that after I read the letterbox. It all starts with something magnificent. Don't know what that means. Two conspiracy obsessed young men kidnap the high powered CEO Emma Stone of a major company, convinced that she is an alien intent on destroying planet Earth. Jesse Plemons is one of those conspiracy obsessed young men. It turns out there are other things going on. If you don't want to hear about Pugonia,
yeah,
pause, skip on some and hit chat on to other bits, because we're going to spoiler alert Pugonia.
I will say, when we come to some films later, we won't spoil all of them, but we are spoiling this one.
Tell me more about why this doesn't star Emma Stone or Jesse Plemons. What does that mean?
It doesn't mean anything. I was just saying it as a joke to express that I didn't really enjoy the film.
Because I saw this in New York on a rainy day in New York.
As Woody Allen?
Yeah, I was flying back and it was pissing down, absolutely hammering down. I couldn't do anything. But I thought, oh, great, I tried to see Pugonia twice before whilst I was in New York. I had no interest.
Can confirm. Love to say I was there with you in New York. Not with you, but I was also there, and for a bit with you.
I'd walked down all the way. I didn't want to get on the subway because I was scared. I'd walked all the way down to some East Village AMC, and they were playing Pugonia 35mm. And I was like, oh, I can walk down there and I can go and catch it. Sold out.
Really? America. Imagine.
America.
A cinema screen sold out in America.
I was like, oh my God. And then I walked back up towards where I was staying, and there was an AMC between those bits. And I thought, I can go and see that one. And it was still on. There were still seats. There were seats right at the front of the screen. Forget it. I didn't want to be crammed in. I was like, it wasn't meant to be. You know, I was tuned into reality. But then guess what?
What?
Hammering down with rain, my last day, Pugonia's on at 10 a.m. Oh. Yes, please.
Yeah. There's no 10 a.m. screening has ever been sold out.
No, there was two other guys, and I was the only one in there roaring with laughter.
Well, I have to say, I think if the cinema screening was busier, you may still have been the only one in there roaring with laughter.
So I enjoyed my experience of Pugonia. I did not enjoy Poor Things or The Favourite.
Right.
I've been a Yorgos Lanthimos fan since I saw Dogtooth in, since I was sat in that, and I was sat next to someone who burst into tears when there's a bit where someone does some self oral surgery, and the girl next to me burst into tears and went, oh no, oh no. You know, that's the sign of, I think, of a great movie.
Right.
Never rewatched it. But so, yeah, you know, I feel like this was a real fun, slight, silly, dark, depressing return to form for Yorgos. You didn't like it, Joe.
No. And interestingly, I think this sort of says a lot about the differences between us. I liked Poor Things, and it was the first Yorgos Lanthimos film that I have liked. I will say, I haven't seen Dogtooth. I bought it on DVD at HMV about, I don't know, 16 years ago, or whenever it actually came out on DVD. Never watched it. I've seen all the others. Don't like any of them except Poor Thing.
You like the lobster quite good. A bit. You like
I really don't like the lobster. I genuinely don't like the lobster.
You're on record as you. There was some bits
I'm
about
not.
The lobster.
Do you not remember? Yeah, because you forced me to say things I liked about it on the podcast, so it wasn't all depressing and horrible. I don't like that film, and I don't like the filmmaking approach or style at all. And I wish Emma Stone would find a new director that she wants to work with more regularly, because I don't like her in these films either. I find the extra heightened like surreality of it all really boring and cold, and that's the main thing I felt about this film. I left feeling very cold, and I found it to be boring, and I triggered you immediately after leaving. Said the one thing to you that you, I think, were, knew I would say, or knew people would say. You claim that this doesn't work. You claim this.
You've heard this one before. There's nothing original in my words. Sounds familiar. It's 'cause I'm recycling a prior opinion. Why can't you find something new to say? Why can't you find something new to say?
Yeah, well, different tastes. Interesting. Like, I think we can move off the specifics of the movie, because what I'm most interested in is your contention that the fact that you knew what was going to happen in the movie is somehow relevant, because
it's a twist.
No, I disagree. I think most movies, I'd say, you broadly know what's going to happen, because most movies are genre movies, and you know what's going to happen. How they're going to play out specifically, like, oh, the boy's going to get the girl, and then he's going to lose the girl, and then he's going to get the girl back.
I agree with that for sure.
Yeah. You know that in all the movies. Watching Die Hard, you know that John McClane is going to win. Okay, that's, you know, the end of the movie, and that's kind of irrelevant.
When you watch an M. Night Shyamalan film, if you were to work out the twist.
Wait a minute, let me finish my point. Most movies, I would say, it's all about the execution and whether you enjoy the journey and do they surprise you and do they do interesting things. Now, this obviously, Pugonia, you didn't like the tone of it, you didn't like the violence, fair enough. This, and also you're going to come and you're going to, there's no twist in this movie. This film is not reliant on a twist. Again, like, I just think you just didn't like the movie. Just say you didn't like it. You saying, oh, I knew how this movie was going to end, I think is bullshit.
Why does it bother you so much?
It's bullshit. It's a bullshit criticism because it doesn't count. It doesn't. It means you've put the walls up and have said, oh, sorry. The thing is, I'm saying this to myself. I have done this as well. I've done the same thing. I'm like, yeah. I know what you're going to do. But why I enjoyed this to an extent, I didn't enjoy it wholeheartedly. Like, the front end, I think, is quite slow.
You've moved on to other points, though, right? Haven't you? Like, can I not come back on the specific issue of the twist? Because you're about to tell me why you like the film.
No, I'll bring it back. Okay, you'll bring it back. No, because I think you are... I think you're right. This film has problems. The front end is far too slow, and Yorgos he's really trying to he wants to sell you on the scenario of these two guys, and they've kidnapped the CEO, and he wants you to believe it, and it means that you are in this for about a good 45 to 50 minutes. There's a bit, like, I'd say the front end went before they kidnap her is quite fun, but there's a good chunk of time where you're like, yeah, we get it. The film only then really starts to soar and sing and be funny, I would say, a little bit too late in the day, by which point a viewer like Joe has tapped out and he's done with it, and I think that's fair enough, and I have got no problems with that. I'm in New York, I'm in a rainy day, I've got nowhere else to be anyway. I was feeling bored, and then I was fully, because I'm in the cinema, I'm fully welcoming the fun back end of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting in the cognitive dissonance of knowing and not knowing that she probably must be an alien, but also like, oh, what if she's not? You know, I don't know where Yorgos is going to go with this. He could easily not have her, but, you know, I really know. I know she is, but, like, I can play with that in my head, you know, because, and then it allows me to enjoy it more. You have no interest. You just want to win. You want to beat the movie.
I don't want to. I want to be swept away by the film, okay? To go back to what you were saying 5 minutes ago, okay, maybe seven. Here it is. that was a little aside dig for fun. It wasn't seven. It was three.
It was a chunk.
It was maybe five. You said most films don't rely on you knowing or not knowing what's going to happen at the end, right? Like, most films, you know, and I completely agree with that. This isn't supposed to be most films. My contention, which you obviously don't believe, and that's fine. This is where we disagree, is that Yorgos Lanthimos thinks that he's setting up a film where he's telling you one thing and then there is a surprise twisty element to it towards the end, and that it's going to be so quaint, like all of his fucking films are. They're all so quaint, that always, like, the silliest, weirdest thing happens and he goes, oh, see, oh, can you imagine if they were to turn into an animal at the end? Yeah, that can't happen in real life, but it can happen in my film because I'm Yorgos Lanthimos, right? That's what happens in all of the film, with the exception of Poor Things, which follows more of like a standard story structure. This is what always happens in his films. In my opinion, that she is the alien that the kidnappers suspect her to be is the twist. It is a twist. It's the most Yorgos Lanthimos thing I could think of. And then, not only when you find that out, do you have to continue fucking watching, you also then have to watch these boring scenes played out. Like, the point where you describe the film that, for you, is taking fine, off. Fine, I'm like, I'm so bored by this right. point. I'm like, get out of this. Get out of your own fucking ass, man. This is so boring.
The thing in The Lobster, that's not a twist at the beginning.
No,
of the
I know
movie.
The Lobster isn't it's a twist. Just, I know.
Find something new to say.
Well, I didn't know that it was a remake. I'd never seen the original. I didn't know anything about it. I guessed the twist and you didn't. And that's why you're really upset. Let me tell you, by the way, apart from now, when this is going out, I would say like over a month after, maybe even slightly longer, 5-6 weeks after it released in the cinema, where the people that wanted to go and see it in the cinema will have seen it in the cinema. I'm very proud of myself. I think you'd be proud of me too, because on two separate occasions, once on the internet and once in real life, I managed to withhold what I felt about this film because I recognised that I saw it early in the run and I didn't want to impact anybody's viewing of it one way or another. So people asked me about it who were going to see it in a few days' time, and I didn't tell them what I thought.
What have they said subsequently?
Well, I didn't ask. I don't care.
We did some travelling a couple of weeks back.
Oh.
Well, I've been on a plane. Joe's been on a plane. And we've watched movies on a plane. So how do you watch movies on a plane, Joe? You got a different vibe to me.
This journey, because I'm an experienced traveller. It's not true, but I've done a bit more travelling recently and I don't really enjoy it, so I thought I would prepare well. I went to three different streaming services on my phone, downloaded several films from each just to prepare for all different eventualities. The one main rule I had was that I would only pick films that would be fulfilling in some ways, a little wholesome, that would make me feel better, and that wouldn't introduce any sort of sneaky feelings of sadness or terror or anything like that was too uncertain. Because, again, I'm not a big fan of travelling or flying, so I've got to look out for my mood there. And I think I played a bloody blinder. Tell you what, I enjoyed it so much, my options on the plane, that I continued through the week. Well, I was working in New York and you just sort of happened to be there at the same time. So we hung out for one night. In the evenings, late evenings when I was in bed, I continued to watch my plane films. And I survived the whole week and the flight back with my original choices, which I thought were terrific. Here's the films that I watched. I'll just buzz through them very quickly, okay? On the flight out, it was a double bill. Turned out to both be musicals. I wasn't expecting that. I didn't know what was going to happen. But I sat down on the plane, and of all of my options, which included a lot of Harry Potter just for extra comfort, didn't end up watching any of it, I started with a good old trusty film known as La La Land. Oh, wow. Absolutely fantastic. Talk about Emma Stone being in a great movie. This is a great film. I wrote about it first film on a flight to NYC. It's so fabulous, so watchable, so compelling. The music gets better every time. Incredible filmmaking for the masses. That's what I wrote. I do genuinely believe that about that film. I won't linger because I've talked about that several times before. And then to follow it up on the back end, yeah, not long before we landed, The Sound of Music I watched, which is 3 hours long. Where better to watch a 3-hour long film than on a long haul flight, by the way. And I hadn't seen it for maybe, probably 20 years or something. And I was completely, I was blown away by the film. Even the opening scene where, I guess it would be shot by a drone these days, but is obviously a helicopter back in the day, spinning around Julie Andrews, doing her spinning on the hill, singing. I mean, what film opens with the fucking biggest hit? It's so funny as well. Like, you know, within a second of it starting, the hills are alive with the sound.
Well, it wasn't the big hit then, was it? It was just the song, right?
Oh no, man! The filmmakers who are making that film, they listen to that song. They know this is the hit. Like when you're writing an album before you've released it, you know which the hit is, which the single is. Like you don't need the audience to tell you for you to know. So I just love the idea of starting. There's nothing else. There's been no speaking. There's no context. You don't know who this person is. You don't know anything about them. The opening scene is her spinning around on the hill and you're instantly hooked, instantly in love with the character. You're laughing at me. When did you last watch The Sound of Music?
I mean, it's my wife's favourite movie of all time.
Terrific taste. She's got
terrific
taste. And
the only time I ever saw it was at her insistence, early doors when in the courting phase of like, I mean, I've made her watch Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. I've made her watch sci-fis. And it's probably at least a year or so into our courtship where I say, oh, sorry, what films do you like? Oh, The Sound of Music. Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, no, never seen it. Of course I'll watch it. Of course. I'm, you know, it's equality. I'm a feminist. Oh, I'll watch a woman's favorite movie. You know, the film starts, you're like, what? This is fucking stupid, isn't it?
What?
No, I don't know. I saw it once. And I did kind of warm to it when I watched it maybe 15 years ago. And there's Christopher Plummer. The whole movie is Christopher Plummer, you know? And as soon as whenever he's not on screen,
it's
when he says, you've brought, you know, music into this house or whatever, great moment. And then, you know, the whole back end of the movie's boring when they're running from the Nazis. Yeah, end it.
That's true. After the interval, it's the intermission, it's not quite as much fun. But
and then also the whole thing of the Von Trapps hated each other. The story behind the story just makes the movie stinky and really stinky.
Okay. That was my flight to New York. What did you watch on your flight to New York?
Well, I had quite the selection on the big screen that I had. Wonderful selection of movies. I didn't have to download anything onto my phone. I'd never watch a movie on a phone. All the new movies that would be on Now TV in America, movies I've been waiting to watch for free, but just would never pay for, you know? And of course, the first movie that I'm going to pop on that I would refuse to pay for but would love to watch is Ballerina. From the John Wick universe.
Oh, yes.
Starring Ana de Armas.
Right. Ana de Armas.
Ana de Armas. And this, as soon as I saw that, I was like, yes, that's the first one. I'm watching that. It's going to be, I can switch off. However shit it could be, it's going to be the perfect amount of shit. Because I quite like John Wick 2 and John Wick 4. I love action. Right. I love shotguns. I love people getting shot.
I thought you were saying John Wick 2. Like, and I was like, he must be the writer of the film or something. But no, you were saying John Wick 2.
John Wick 2.
Right, yeah.
And it was the perfect plane movie. Just really terrific. Good. She's a bit dour in it. She's not really having enough fun. But it's a pretty fun action flick. And it's from the director Len Wiseman, who did the Underworld movies. And,
oh, yeah.
The Total Recall remake.
Mm.
And there's some really good shots. I mean, I said shotguns already. There's some good shotgun stuff, man. And
What was in the actual gun?
Yeah, she really shotguns some people.
Oh, really?
So, wow. Yeah, some good splatter. But yeah, the whole back at the end of the movie, I kind of started to tune out and it gets a bit boring. They get John Wick, aka Keanu Reeves, they crowbar him back into the movie, and it reeks of this movie. The fans want John Wick, and it's like, no, they don't. They want Ana de Armas. She's got this, man.
Yeah,
she can. You want to? I'd want to see a sexy young woman killing other people and like with ice picks and knives and stuff. I don't need. Yeah, Joe's livid. I've said sexy young woman.
I was laughing with a little bit of, not livid, just a little bit of, I don't think you want me to explain why, do you? Do you want me to explain why?
No, you're right.
No.
What's wrong with being sexy, to quote Christopher Guest from Spinal Tap?
Indeed. Interesting theme of your films,
but
isn't it?
The theme will be tied up perfectly with the movie that I watched three quarters worth on the way back.
Oh, you want
to
carry on?
To finish.
Let's stay with you. No.
This will tie me up and then you can finish you.
Yeah. Let's stay with
the
you.
We should, because I watched the Final Destination movie.
Oh, my God. What
the
is...
new Final...
This couldn't be more different from the films that I picked to watch on planes.
This is why I said it.
Uh-huh.
Final Destination, a movie where tiny little things go wrong and people die.
Yeah. What number?
It's the new one. It's like 7 or something.
I think it's more than seven. I think there must... Let me find out how many there are.
It's not much more. It's like 7 or 8. It's the reboot of the franchise. And do you know what? It's very, very trashy, but it's very, very fun. People die in very silly, fun ways. Some lovely spatter.
Oh, it's 6. There's only 6.
Oh, look at that. My says, and I, this the new one is 7.
There was a big gap, though.
I said seven.
But
and
it's
this
six.
Is 7. And you. No, this isn't the 6th.
No, it's 6.
This is 6.
Yes. That's why it's funny that you're so aggressively telling me that you said 7. Final Destination came out in 2000, number 2 in 2003, number 3 in 2006, The Final Destination, which is the 4th one, came out in 2009.
Right.
2 years later, in 2011, Final Destination 5, and then nothing until 2025, Final Destination Bloodlines.
Right, damn it. Fuck.
Yeah.
One off being pristine.
That is embarrassing, isn't it? How embarrassing. Really?
I'm very embarrassed.
I think the reason I said there's a big gap is because I obviously thought there were more due to that large gap.
Well, people lost interest in the old Final Destination.
Oh, big time.
But I thought the last one, Final Destination 5, everyone hated it. And I think it's quite a lovely little... it's a lovely little closing of the circle of the whole series.
Right.
And this one is just super fun, you know? People get... It begins at the top of a very tall tower as well with a kind of a swank meal. And I was like, oh, I've seen this movie before. But yeah, this is like you'd hate to watch a Final Destination movie on a plane, wouldn't you?
Well, to be honest, I'd hate to watch one anywhere I was. Not because of fear necessarily, but... largely just because it's not my kind of vibe, you know, not my sort of thing, that summoned peril. I'm not really into it, you know. I don't want to go into an experience knowing this is designed to scare me.
Why not? But like, because you know it's silly, like the whole thing is like the person in the movie, she gets a whiff of what's going to happen, and then everything that then happens, you know, is just a vision, but then you just get to see people spattered and spayed and their head crushed by, you know, like Rube Goldberg type idiocies, you know, like, oh no, the pane of glass is tipping and it slides down and then it tips a thing. It's like Mousetrap, but...
Well, yeah, you know, it's like the creative YouTubers who play the game Hitman and do the kills and really... unusual, interesting ways. I would definitely not have watched that on a plane, though, for sure.
Bonjour. Nice sweater.
What did you watch on the way back?
Well, I was going to do while I was there as well, because it was traveling. Technically, you're traveling the whole time, you know. I had one film on play and pause all the way through the week.
Play and pause?
Yeah, I watched half an hour a night for, you know, or 20 minutes a night or whatever for 3 or 4 nights in a row.
So what did you play and pause?
Well, I played and paused the children's film Casper the Friendly Ghost, you know.
That's weird.
I was partly inspired by the fact that it was Halloween while I was in New York City, but also I hadn't seen it for a very long time. And when I began to watch it, I realized I've seen this film 100 times, I think, but only as a child. Never as an adult have I watched this. So it was an interesting experience because, A, I recognised many of the actors that I didn't recognise when I watched it before. I you know, sometimes you realise the root of something cultural. Like, so in this instance, for example, I'm trying to remember the name now. It's Bill Pullman, isn't it, who plays the
Bill
dad
Pullman.
In Casper? Yeah. So I always thought for a long time that, you know, when I would see Bill Pullman in... of this podcast, he was in Vanilla Sky, for example, right? When I see him in that film, I would think, oh, yeah, there's Bill Pullman from Independence Day, yeah? And when I watched him in Independence Day, I would have thought, oh, he seems very familiar, but I wouldn't have made the connection. Now, as an adult, I watch Casper and I go, wow, I watched Bill Pullman in a movie 100 times without realizing who he was, never having seen him anywhere else. And so this kind of familiar, fond feeling I have with him in every other film is related to this experience rather than, you know, another that I may have previously attributed it to. Does that make sense?
This is fucking insane. Your fucking leaky bucket... is insane, okay? Bill Pullman...
Is that not a...
You did this on Vanilla Sky... Wait, you did this on the Vanilla Sky episode, okay? Bill Pullman is not in Vanilla Sky. It's Kurt Russell. And we did this. We did this a year ago. And you're now talking about him as if he was in Vanilla Sky again.
Whatever.
I've corrected you at the time. I corrected you at the time. And you're like, Bill Pullman, Kurt Russell, whatever the fuck.
Whatever,
and I had to say, you wash your mouth out. How dare you talk about Kurt Russell like that? This is the man from The Thing. This is Snake Plissken.
Now you see.
Yeah. You are a fucking disgrace.
I'm not a disgrace. Now you see. It really is a leaky bucket. I have no memory of that at all. No memory of that whatsoever. I think Bill Pullman is in Vanilla Sky. I think he is in my head, you know.
They've got similar hair. I'll give you that. They've got
they play similar characters. You know, in Vanilla Sky.
No, they haven't. No, they absolutely have not.
In the film, Bill Pullman would have been excellent playing that role in the film. It's very much the role he plays in Casper. Maybe this is why I've thought that's Bill Pullman for a long time, because Kurt Russell is basically playing the dad from Casper the Friendly Ghost in Vanilla Sky and with a similar haircut. And so I'm getting a bit confused about who's who.
So he's like, what, a kind of a warm, nice dad type?
He plays the dad, yeah.
Does he do anything else? He's a background dad.
He gets a bit drunk. He's not that background. Mum's dead. He's a ghost hunter, but he's very modern, I would say. He has a lot of faith and trust in his daughter. He's a little absent. He's looking for his long lost wife. That's about it, really.
Yeah, sorry, Kosei. Russell never played that kind of character.
Yeah, he did. He played it in Vanilla Sky. That's what I said at the beginning. He literally plays exactly the same character in Vanilla Sky. The amusing thing is, in Vanilla Sky, he's playing a character because he's a figment of the imagination of Tom Cruise, but he's the father figure. He's this nice American dad. They're exactly the same. They both are empty.
Okay.
And in Vanilla Sky, he's supposed to be empty because he's a
psychiatrist, though.
Yeah, but he's a figment of the imagination. He, you know, do you not remember that scene at the end where they're on the roof and the English guy is saying, he's exactly what you needed, a father figure. Didn't you ever notice that all the things that he was saying were just seemed like they were really smart, but actually they were empty, which is exactly what Bill Pullman does in Casper, the ghost, as well. Not intentionally, I will add.
I tell you what I loved about being in New York was the bridges, and really brought to mind a movie that I watched recently, a rewatch recently, was Cloverfield, which I hadn't seen in so long. And there's a whole sequence in Cloverfield where they're on the Brooklyn Bridge.
No.
And the big monster just kind of like smashes its tail through.
No.
And I was in New York and I was on that bridge and it was just like, oh my God, right. I'm watching this movie.
That's not a segue.
And when I saw the...
That's not a segue. That's what my wife does, where she starts talking to me and she says, I said that as well. And I go, what are you talking about? And she goes, oh, sorry, I was thinking. You know, that's what that is.
Yeah.
We're talking about Bill Pullman and Kurt Russell.
Yeah, no,
that's what's happening.
We're in a cul-de-sac. The cul-de-sac was boring me, and then I just thought for a little bit of fun, I'd do the thing where I did the thing.
Well, it can be fun, but it that doesn't make it a segue.
I know, but
you've broken the rules.
Wait!
I always liked going south. Somehow, it feels like going down a hill.
That's funny, actually, that you say that, because I was watching something the other day where I felt very similar. It was the animation film Watership Down, and I just thought, wow. Well, as I was walking around New York, I was like, it feels so dangerous here, or something, like a fox or a larger animal could come out at any time, or a farmer. And why are you still drawing? Why are you still drawing? But I did think it had wonderful animation. And I also enjoyed the fact that it was an animation film back in the day where characters were still spoken like they were just middle-aged people from England. John Hurt, you know, he's appeared a few times with me recently.
Who did he hurt?
Who did he hurt? Actually, quite a lot of rabbits. Yeah. Anyway, on the plane on the way back, you want to know what I watched on the way back?
Hmm.
This is a little different. Because I was coming home, so I was a bit more chilled out. I watched the end of The Damned United, because I'd watched the beginning of it while I was in New York. And then, because it's a shorter flight on the way home, of course, I popped on, after I'd had a little nap, I popped on a film I think I'd never seen before, although there were times while I was watching it where I really did question that. We've already, of course, we've heard examples of how leaky my bucket brain can be. So it's very feasible that I've seen the whole thing before. It was the film Remember the Titans. You know that one? Remember that one?
Yeah, I told you to watch it.
Did you?
Yes, I told you to, when we did Denzel, I said,
right,
you should watch this. It's like so broad, it's so cheesy. It's like,
right, yeah.
I watched it. I watched it on the shit Disney thing. I watched it in the lead up to our Denzel episode.
Oh, did you indeed?
And I found it quite winning in a kind of, because there's a kind of a plot point. I didn't knew nothing about it. There's a plot point around 2/3 of the way through. I was like, oh, I didn't think this movie was going to be about.
Right. What's that?
When the kids in the car crash.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh, wow, this is throwing every single bit of shit at the wall.
Yes.
And seeing what sticks.
He's,
and that
he's
bit
remarkably
stuck for me.
Calm and cool after he's been in that car crash. Oh, there's a really funny scene where...
It's based on a guy, is real life, okay?
And no, that's what I'm the not guy saying, was really no, of like. Course. I believe that character could win in the Paralympics. What I'm saying is that, you know, everyone rushes to the hospital, don't they? The night that he's in the car crash. And, you know, then his friend arrives, Avon Barksdale from The Wire. He arrives and the nurses say, he only wants to see you. Or the mother says, he only wants to see you. And I'm thinking, well, that's kind of fucking weird because his whole family's here. But okay, he goes in and he's paralyzed. That's it, he's paralyzed. He'll never walk again. Never play football again. He walks in, he's paralyzed. But he's sitting up in bed, happy as Larry, chirpy as ever, and says, hey, don't worry about me. I'll work it out. Old pal, buddy, old pal, you know, like it's no big deal at all. He doesn't have any bruises anywhere else in his face. He seems like, you know, he's the perfect sort of sweet character. All you're saying there is, like, apart from the text at the end of the film that tells you about the rest of his life, his arc is finished now. Don't worry about him anymore. That arc is now done because this crash has also coincidentally resolved all of his problems, and he's just a happy-go-lucky, chilled-out, crazy guy.
No, it's a testament to, like, who you are, your character, whatever happens to you, it doesn't change you. Like, you know, no. They say, like, if you win the lottery, if you're a cunt before, uh-huh, you know, you might be a bit nicer for a month, and then afterwards you'll go back to being a cunt. It's the same thing. Like, if you're a really nice person, that's exactly what they say. All the things, if you're, like, really, really nice and something bad happens to you, you might suffer a bit, but then you'll go back. You'll always revert to the mean. And that's why I'm always, that's my big fear about me is, you know,
you'll never stop being a cunt.
Exactly. And this is what it's a feel good story that it just gets there quicker.
That's the thing.
It gets there quicker because there's no
it
time.
I'm just saying, like, it really takes me out of the film because even if you're a really, 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 really nice guy and you're super chill about everything and the most zen person you could imagine, if you get paralyzed unexpectedly, the same night, you're a bit upset about that at the very least. You know, you're not just joshing around with your pals. Yeah, and
I
if you are
straight joshing, just to prove you yeah, wrong, to prove, I'm going to josh
exactly, and that's my kind of my main point. Anyway, here's my summary of the film.
No, we're not done.
Here's my summary of the film. I said it's absolutely fine. I'm not actually 100% certain I finished it. There may well be a few minutes left. That's exactly the kind of film it is. I was landing. The plane was landing. I think there's 5 minutes left to watch. I never finished it. I don't care.
No, that's fair enough. But also, bear in mind, in terms of the film, when he is paralyzed, it's at the back end. Huh? There's no time to do any of this stuff. If you want to watch the movie...
Are you really lingering on this?
Wait a minute. If you want to watch the movie where the guy's sad, uh-huh, watch The Diving Bell and the Butterfly. All right? If you want to watch the movie about racial integration and being getting on with each other, you watch Remember the Titans.
No.
Okay, no, these things
is,
are sick.
No, no, no. This is wrong. This is wrong. This is wrong.
It's not. This is
it's
wrong.
Absolutely fine. It's absolutely fine. To you can achieve all of the same things that they achieve with that scene, with him being a bit more sad and a little bit teary. That's absolutely fine. Or even just a bit tired, or even like full of drugs, like he might be, or anything. Like, you can achieve all the same stuff. You don't need him to be like completely character perfect in that moment. It's way overplayed.
Within the span of human time and human experience, there will have been someone who was paralyzed who responded like that.
Yes.
Okay, it's well within the human experience and the idea that...
And the doctors and nurses in that room would have been taken out of themselves for a moment and thought, well, this is very unusual. Is this really happening? Does this seem strange? Well, I'll have to tell people about this. That's crazy. That seems really wild.
I recently rewatched The Damned United as well. Damned United as well. Did you know that I'd rewatch The Damned United? Was it just...
I don't think so. No.
Yeah. It's good, isn't it?
I think it's a terrific film.
It is really terrific. What it does really well about it gets football right, because it realises that the way it does the results, the way it does the games, it goes very, very short little snippets of the games, but then it basically just hard cuts.
It's punchline, yeah.
To 2-0. 3-0 or whatever, and I guess no other sports movie could really do that now, because it's absolutely nailed it. It absolutely gets football.
It's really good. And also, I think, one, you know, for the same reason that you could argue that football isn't a very cinematic sport in terms of its structure, because it's so low scoring that there aren't that many opportunities, like in, you know, we were just talking about this other movie. That's an American football, where you can have like a big touchdown and then a score the other way and then back and forth. And same with basketball and like a film like
Space Jam.
Space Jam, one of the great all-time basketball movies, the original Space Jam. The whole like last third of that film is the game, because there's so many points scored. You could never make Space Jam with soccer, because you couldn't have the last third of the film be a soccer game with nothing happening and no one scoring any goals, right? Like, what, it's just people tackling each other over and over again, and failed moves and passes that don't connect. So I think that, in generally speaking, that's one of the reasons that soccer is considered to be uncinematic, not because of how it looks, but because of how it's played. Whereas in this film, you're absolutely right, they use it as an opportunity to do punchlines all the time. In fact, in many cases, they just skip the action completely, and they hard cut directly from a very empowering, exciting, inspirational Brian Clough pre-game team talk to the text on screen saying they've lost the game, you know. And it's super effective. In my opinion, it's the best football film that there is.
Yeah, there's the Jim Broadbent quote. He's got this amazing... Yeah, we'll play that in, because it's great.
I'm going to give you some good advice, Brian Clough. No matter how good you think you are, how clever, how many fancy new friends you make on the telly, the reality of football in life is this. The chairman is the boss, then comes the directors, then the secretary, then the fans, then the players, and then finally... Last of all, bottom of the heap, the lowest of the low, comes the one who, in the end, we can all do without, the blooming manager.
Should we go to the cinema?
I'd love to go to the cinema. What would you like to see?
Well, I'd like to see more, but I haven't got to see that much. I got to see Begonia.
Pugonia, more like.
I went to see Predator Badlands at the IMAX. That's what I've been to see, yeah.
Are those lands any bad?
Yeah, it's good fun. I mean, I don't know if I can talk to you about Predator, because the amount you've shit on the original...
The original Predator.
I don't know why I would talk about the world with you.
I've completely forgotten that, by the way. You can 100%... Here you go. It's carte blanche. Next time you say Predator in the game at the end of a normal podcast, I will say yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Because I would love the chance to spend an hour with you shitting on Predator. I would love that.
It's just a fun, really silly flick. It's the first Predator flick where you are with the Predator.
Oh, are you with the Predator?
Isn't that cool?
That is cool. Is the Predator still the antagonist?
He's the protagonist.
But and is he a villain?
Well, there's lots of Predators. Predator is just a name, but they are Yautja. Yautja? Yautja. That's their species. The species are Yautja with the little fangs.
What, like, is like the normal Predator from the original Predator?
No, that's just one guy. That's like saying...
No, I'm not saying Bruce... that character. I'm saying, is it the same species as that one?
Yeah, they're all Yautja.
Right.
Yautja. Say it.
Yautja.
Yautja.
Like I've stood on some Lego. Yautja.
Yeah, exactly. So this is far in the future. Yautja, and he's a kind of a runt Yautja. Kind of begins in a very familiar way whereby it's the kind of training, there's a more alpha, and then there's the kind of beta who's they're both trying to impress father.
Do they speak English, Yautja?
No, they don't. This is why it's quite a bold flick, you know.
Do they speak at all?
They speak, but it's all subtitled.
It's like a foreign film.
You're effectively watching a foreign movie.
Wow.
With a non-human protagonist.
They should have done that thing where, like, they were one side of a tree and they were speaking Yautja, and then the camera goes behind the tree and the tree changes the scene, and when they come out the other side, they're speaking English in American accents. That would have been great.
No, that would have been lame. And there's a point in the movie where there's almost like a nod where you think, like, oh, they might do that to make it easy. Mm-hmm. And they're like, nah. Fuck off. He's only ever going to speak Yautja.
Right.
Which is kind of cool. I liked it. I like that. And then it's very silly. It's very genre. And he ends up on these badlands. The best bit is it's like 20 minutes into the flick. And then he lands on this very, very dangerous planet. And you're like, oh, fuck. And then the massive title card comes up. It's on the IMAX. It said Predator Badlands. And it's also got framed by 20th Century Fox. And it's just like, bah! And you're like, yeah. That's how you start a movie. That's how you fucking start a movie. It's still quite hard to care. Sorry. Hello.
Hi there. Can I speak to the director of Predator Badlands, please?
Yes, speaking. This is he, Dan Trachtenberg.
He, Dan. Hi, he, Dan. I hope you're doing well. I'm a Jeffrey Dahl. I'm from the studio. What did you say it was? 21st Century Fox?
It's Jeffrey from 20th Century Fox. Yeah,
hi. 20th Century Fox. That's right. Yeah, not 21st Century. That's a joke I make sometimes with my family. You know, they say, "What are you, Danny? What are you going to do at work?" And I say, "I'm going to upgrade that 20 into a 21, you know."
Is that your joke?
Which it's not really a joke, it's more of a funny comment. I wouldn't call it a joke because there's no punchline or anything, but it's when I say it, if you were there and a child, I hasten to add, you'd at least they seem to really enjoy it. Maybe they don't. Anyway, what's your name again? He, Dan?
My name is Dan. Dan Trachtenberg, the director. You called me. I'm the director of the new Predator
Battenberg.
Movie.
That's right, Dan Battenberg. My bad. I'm sorry. Yes, I was just watching some rushes of the film this morning. Looks beautiful, by the way. Wow, I love that scene where you put 20th Century Fox up around the... I really like that scene. I did have one question, though. Is there ADR coming later in the process, or when do I get to hear them, and who have we actually cast to voice these predators?
No, it's all as they sound. We do have a kind of a synthetic humanoid character who pops up later. I don't know how far you got into the flick.
Uh-huh.
She says there is some English speaking going on, but the hero predator, Yautja. He just speaks Yautja,
right?
And that's what we're doing.
So Kevin Spacey's in the film.
Hmm? What
you said? Kevin Spacey's in the film.
No.
Oh, sorry. No, I thought you said that there was a synthetic humanoid character. I thought you must have been referring to Kevin Spacey.
Elle
Can I just
Fanning,
ask, are you walking on a lot of, are you stepping on pieces of Lego? Because God, I know when I'm at home with my kids and I'm walking around the house with socks on, I'm stepping on pieces of Lego. I say a lot of, oh, youcha, youcha.
No, I'm sat down, sir, and youcha is the name of the species of predator. Elle Fanning, she plays a synthetic humanoid within the movie. She's from the Weyland-Yutani world, from Alien.
Right.
So we're kind of bringing over the Alien,
bringing them together
for the first time. Lore of Alien lore and then Predator lore.
That's one of the other reasons I'm calling, because firstly, I was hoping to hear them speak English. I think that's going to be important. And the second thing is, I'm a bit concerned about the title. I'm new here. I don't know. We haven't spoken that much before. So I haven't worked on any of the previous Predator titles. But I do think that we might be telling the American people that these films are about dangerous pedophiles. And I wonder if we could consider... That's why I'm asking about the Alien thing. Could we consider changing the title at all, adding another word in, hey, I'm not a creative. It's you guys that you do great work, by the way. But maybe we could just tweak the title a little bit so that we know that there's something. Because I know the working title is Predator Badlands. Now that makes me think, hey, I got to keep my kids inside. I don't know where these Badlands are. Maybe they're near my house. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I think purely in the realm of animal. Like hunting movies, like David Attenborough and stuff. Like when you talk of a lion being a predator, no one's sitting down watching that and going, "Oh, is this a documentary about paedophiles who capture gazelle?"
Right.
I just don't think it tallies.
No, well, no, but then a paedophile would never catch a gazelle. One of the reasons that paedophiles
capture children.
Yeah, their children are very, very slow. They're very slow. I'm not calling to talk or debate the finer points of paedophilia. I'm calling to talk about not misleading the American public. I don't know what happens in other countries. Here, when someone says predator, I think about paedophilia. And I'm just worried that we are alienating some family audiences from a film like this. Now, for two reasons. One, because we're making them think of paedophiles. Two, because it's not even in English, is what I'm coming to understand from speaking to you. And I don't know about you, Hedan, but I don't like to read my films.
But then so much of this movie is pure cinema. Okay, there's not that much dialogue anyway. You can see it all. It takes place on a foreign alien planet.
Foreign? This film isn't set in America.
It's foreign and alien. It's Badlands. America's the good lands, okay? I don't think the American people want to go and see a movie called Badlands and be set in America.
No, I like that. American good lands. That's a good... How that makes me feel. That makes me feel really good about myself. That makes me feel like proud of my nation. American Goodlands. Could we think about a separate franchise, or even just renaming this one, bringing in some English, maybe throwing a little bit of Monsanto Farms in there, something that's really makes us feel proud to be wearing these blue jeans? Can we have the Predator wear blue jeans, for example? I mean, not Predator, but the Alien.
Yeah, I just think we shouldn't just change stuff just because of your narrow prism. But the film's been shot and greenlit, and it's a bit late in the day. Everyone knows the franchise. Everyone knows Arnie and the Predator. Okay, everyone knows Danny Glover and the Predator. Mm-hmm. That's what the Predator is,
right?
That's why we got greenlit, because this is the IP.
I'm with you, pal.
I'm not going to let paedophiles ruin my IP.
Well, and that's very much, that was the message that was coming across when it was Arnie, when it was Glover, this is a film about a paedophile, but wait, here's our hero, he's going to banish the paedophile, we're going to be safe Americans again, whereas this time around, if I'm spending all my time with the pedo, I don't know how I feel about that,
They're not paedophiles.
They're not paedophiles.
Well, let's talk about killing. We know it's using the air.
to the cinema a few times recently, you know.
Yeah, more than me.
More than, well, like, yeah. I mean, that's, that kind of goes without saying, doesn't it? Because,
well, no, it doesn't. It goes with saying. Because
I would say it goes without saying. I care more deeply about cinema than you.
Have you kept your ticket stubs from 1999 to 2004?
No, I don't care about ticket stubs. I care about cinema. That's a different thing. You care about printed bits of paper and proof. I care about art and meaning.
Well, these are just empty words. It doesn't mean anything.
Well, I guess that's one way of looking. Yeah, I mean, no, that's true. I've got no receipts, is what you're saying. I've got no receipts, yeah. No, fair.
It's like saying, oh, you love art, but you haven't got any art up in your house. Do you own DVDs?
Don't. No. Yeah, no, I do.
Do you remember anything you've seen? No.
Okay, let's play a game then. I'll tell you about the films I went to see at the cinema, and then when I'm done, at the end of each one, you tell me whether I really did go and see it or not. Okay?
Okay, we can play that game.
That's a good fun game. Right. Okay. First, I went to see The Mastermind, a film by Kelly Reichardt, or whatever that person's name is, starring Josh O'Connor. You know Josh O'Connor and Alana Haim from that band. Yeah, she's in it. She plays his wife. In 1970, failed architect James Blaine Mooney and cohorts wander into a museum in broad daylight and steal four paintings. When holding on to the art proves more difficult than stealing them, Mooney is relegated to a life on the run. That's the film.
Knowing Kelly Reichardt, I imagine a lot less happens than that.
what else has Kelly Reichardt made, by the way? Because I don't know.
She's made Meek's Cut Off.
Don't know.
Night Moves.
Don't know it.
Yeah, some really good flicks.
She's rated, is she?
I rate her. I think she did the Ben Foster Leave No Trace.
Oh, is that the one in the woods? With the father and the daughter, right? That's interesting.
Oh, and Old Joy.
Is that like a combination of the film Joy and the film Old Boy?
No, it's got Will Oldham of Bonnie Prince Billy fame.
Right.
A really good flick. That it's about these two estranged buddies who just go on a long walk up in the woods. It's really, really good.
Right. Okay. Well, I didn't like this film. I thought it's a very quiet film. I found it pretty boring. Really not a lot happens at all. I spent most of the time trying to understand what the film was supposed to be, what it was supposed to be, what was happening, for why. I do think that Josh O'Connor has a great screen presence. So there's that, you know, and I've seen him a lot in the trailers for the new Knives Out movie. So I can see him going places, that guy. But generally, this film was very boring, and it very, very much did not pass the bum test.
Yeah, you saw that. What else did you see?
I saw Springsteen, Deliver Me From Nowhere. Yeah?
I really can't wait to hear I know that you've seen this for ages, and you've been holding back. Because, I mean, this film just seems pointless.
Well,
it seems like a complete unknown type territory. Jeremy Allen's hot off the bear, you know, who cares?
Who cares? Carmy from the bear, can he do?
Boos.
Can he do Boos?
Do you care about Boos? Before you say, did you care about Boos?
Yes, I care about Boos. I like Bruce. Yeah, big Bruce. Big
Boos. Oh, yeah, you care so much about Boos that you couldn't continue calling him Boos. No, come on now. Let's not muck about. Let's call him Bruce.
I like the boss. I do. And also,
you like Nebraska.
More importantly, I do like Nebraska. Nebraska is my favorite The Boss album, which is worth saying because everyone I've told I've seen, you know, the film, they say, what is it? I say, it's just about the Nebraska album. And they go, oh, I didn't know that. Because obviously they're not really marketing it that way, I don't think, that much.
I don't understand how people read or hear about movies. Like, because if you've heard it, why don't people know what a film is about?
Because like, the trailer makes it look like it's about Bruce Springsteen.
No, that's the trailer. But
and there's a bunch of like hits in the trailer and in the film.
I'm having a go at thickos. Like,
but why are they thick? They just watched the trailer.
Because if you do any reading about the movie, every single headline.
Why would they do that? I don't do that.
Well, then you're all idiots. Every single thing is like, this is about the recording of the album Nebraska. Don't. talk about, don't say, oh, I didn't realize it wasn't about that. Don't say anything. Don't say anything when you say, oh, I've, this is about the recording of the Nebraska. Just nod.
Uh-huh. I'm a big proponent of not reading anything about any film before I go and see it. So I completely understand why people would
say
that.
Did you not know that this was about Nebraska, or did you know it was about Nebraska?
I knew only on the day, I think. So see, I did know before.
How did you find out on the day?
Because I read something about the film before I went to go see it.
Oh, right. You broke your own rule.
Yeah. But also it's because this isn't like, the reason I went to see this is because I wanted to go to the cinema rather than because I wanted to see this film. Does that make sense? I wanted the experience of the cinema on that day. And this was the film that was on at the right time and the film that I wanted to watch. So I did a little bit of flicking around to see what to watch. Anyway, it is just about Nebraska, which is the best album. There are a lot of other hits in it as well. Here's the things I'll say about it very briefly. And, you know, you can't really spoil this film anyway because it's just a biopic of a bit of time of someone's life that did really happen. It's not bad. As far as music biopics go, it's not bad. It has a lot of the elements of a good film. There's a clear ceiling, obviously, on what this sort of thing can achieve. This is never going to be one of the greatest films of all time. I often think that when you imagine yourself being a director and making a film, unless you're like working on a franchise or you are, I don't know, working on a kids film or something, the hope must be, if you're working on a passion project, that there's always the potential that this thing could be one of the greatest films of all time, right? And if you're working on the Springsteen Deliver Me From Nowhere film, that's just not, that's never going to happen. Even in the Timothy Chalamet, Bob Dylan thing, it's just not part of the possible outcome. So that's always, it's always interesting when you go into something with a very clear ceiling like that.
Sorry to derail you just briefly. I think for both of those films, the chatter and the hopes were exactly that, that these would be great movies,
maybe great music biopics, but not like up there with The Godfather, right? Like they're not hoping that people will say for the next 50 years, oh, Springsteen Deliver Me From Nowhere is my favorite film, is the best film of the last 50 years. That's what I mean.
I definitely think that the hope would be that they were great movies,
yeah, but just not like the GOAT movie. Like, you know, like there's a ceiling on what films like this can achieve.
But there's not. There shouldn't be. Like, The Godfather is just a gangster movie. But there shouldn't be, because The Godfather is a gangster movie and so is Goodfellas. I'm just saying that there isn't a ceiling. That's all.
So you think from the genesis of the film, it is feasible, like, or, you know, that anyone would be thinking that Springsteen Deliver Me From Nowhere could be the best film ever made? Do you think anyone that is making the film thinks that that could be the case at the beginning, before any of it's being made? Like, any of the crew, any of the producers, any of the directors, even little Carmy from The Bear, do you think any of them are thinking, this could be my Godfather, this is the one that people are going to be talking about for the next 100 years?
Yeah. why make it then? I think they all genuinely,
that's what's so
it.
Interesting, like, about it.
I know what you're saying.
I know you know what I'm saying. That's why I said, are you just being pedantic? Because what I'm saying
is
simple.
I wasn't, I think we're kind of arguing the same thing, just from different perspectives. What's annoying,
yeah,
is that they all, there is a ceil, there's a, this is kind of invisible ceiling,
a cynicism ceiling,
they hit it, whereas that none of them dare to bust through, you know, and do something else.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly,
but there's not a ceiling, there shouldn't be a ceiling,
yeah,
on art. And I've always said that.
I've heard you say that. You are always saying that. Now, let me just say my main thing. that was like a side point. That was a side point.
Sorry.
It's fine. My main thing about this, why I think it is interesting, at least, if not a great film, or one of the best films of all time.
Could have been the best film ever.
The reason is because it is quite unusual as far as music biopics go. Here's why. Bruce doesn't drink or do drugs in the film. Yeah, the film doesn't show you him getting big or famous at the beginning. It is just about Nebraska. So he's already famous when the film begins. There's not really loads of origin story here, although there are a lot of flashbacks to when he was a much younger child. His manager, played by the guy from Succession, the main guy, is a really great guy. he's a nice character. In usually, again, like in these music biopics, it's the manager that like fucks the band over, or the is the representative of the evil music industry, and that's just not the case here in that in this film. And the record label is used to create some stakes in the film, because it has to be, because there aren't any others. But A, it's kind of fair enough as far as the storyline goes, because what Bruce is asking them to do is kind of crazy. He's like at the height, or he's about to be at the height of his popularity. He's a huge hit in America, and he wants them to release, not only does he want them to release this sort of strange folky-esque acoustic album off the back of some like mega hits and big pop music that he's written. He also spends weeks and weeks and weeks in the studio trying to get the sound identical to the sound that he got on his four track at home when he recorded it. And in the end, he insists on them releasing the original that he recorded at home with no help, and with no promotion and no tour attached to it. And the record label are a bit unsure about doing that. And so I think the stakes are reasonable in this case. If I worked for the record label, I'd say, I wonder if this is a good idea. And I don't think this is a film saying, oh, we should judge the record label negatively, like looking back in history. No, no, no. Any professional working would at least say, can we try to promote this thing in some way? Can we have a tour? Can we put a hit on it? Like, all of those things are questions that they should be asking. And also, the stakes are just never really that real, because you know it's the boss, and this is one of the great albums. The main thing is that he's dealing with his anxiety throughout the film, which kind of makes it this slightly more postmodern thing. And the film sort of culminates with him getting a therapist. You know, the text at the end of the film that appears, you know, to talk about the rest of his life relates directly to his mental health. So I think that they clearly see that as the sort of core experience of the viewer.
Oh, this is why you like it.
No, that's not why I like
it. It feeds into your, like, big headline, Adam, get a therapist. Oh, you'd love it if you got a therapist. Get a therapist. Get into therapy, Adam.
There's one scene where Jeremy Allen White, the Carmy from The Bear, who's playing Bruce, is in the studio and he's recording and playing for the first time with the band, Born in the USA. And the film does that.
So the band's called Born in the USA?
Oh, my God.
You what? Is that what his band's called? Did he name it after the song, or did the song?
Yeah, he named it after the song. Together? And they do this wonderful thing, you know, that wonderful thing that music biopics all do, or sports films do, or anything based on a true story where something crazy happens, where you look through the glass into the production booth, and the manager and the sound engineer and the producer, they're all looking at each other, going, "Wow, this is incredible." They are visualizing the feeling of the viewer. That scene is amazing. And that song is amazing, but like, that is worth it just on its own. Even if you were just to watch that on YouTube, if you don't care about Bruce Springsteen, if you don't want to watch the film, just watch that scene on YouTube in about a year when it'll be one of those ones that's everywhere. It's a great scene. It's a great scene. I went to see the film The Choral. Not for really any reason other than Ralph Fiennes was in it, and I trust Ralph Fiennes to pick interesting films, you know?
Up in my lonely room, wow, when I'm dreaming of you, oh, what can I do? Oh. I just want you, but oh. I won't be... Is this a movie about the Scouts band got together?
No, it's not. That would be The Choral. This is The Choral.
Is it about them?
No, it's not about them. Thank the Lord. It's written by Alan Bennett, directed...
What is it?
It's about. I didn't know that until the end either. When the credits rolled, I said to Megan, did it just say it was written by Alan Bennett? And she said, I don't know. And that was the end of that conversation. But it was directed by Nicholas... Hintner.
As soon as you said Nicholas Bennett.
Nicholas Hintner.
Of course it was directed by Hintner. I said to Mother, I've written another script, Mother. We must get Nicholas in. Oh, good.
Well, it's funny you said that, because I said to Mother that the only reason I went to see this film is because it had Ralph Fiennes in it. And I thought, he makes interesting choices as a character, does Ralph Fiennes, Mother.
but on this occasion, I wonder if the film and the project was more interesting in the imagined eye rather than in
the execution. What is it? I can't believe you would go to see such a flick. I don't even know what it's about. I don't even understand how it exists.
A choral society's male members enlist in World War I, leaving the demanding Dr. Guthrie to recruit teenagers. Together, they experience the joy of singing while the young boys grapple with their impending conscription into the army.
Christ alive. So it's History Boys, but in the past.
They're not actually that young, and there's quite a lot of old people in it as well. There's the guy from series 2 and 3 and 4 of The Thick of It, you know, the Tory MP, Peter, whatever his blustery name is. Yeah, I can't remember his name. Let me just get the actor's name.
Oh, okay, yeah, he's really good. Peter Hallam? Roger Allam?
Roger Allam, yeah. He's terrific. He plays like the mill owner who basically funds the choral, the choir. And they are all
stop
of their
saying
people.
The choral. I just keep thinking of
the guy. No, that's why I'm saying the choral.
My only room. Oh.
Yeah, he funds it. All the lads go off to World War I. They lose a lot of their people, so they open up to new auditions. What's interesting about it is basically it's a very unusual film. It also has Mark Addy in it, who may be most famously from
Monty.
Say that again.
Full Monty.
Yeah, from the Full Monty, which this film is basically half Full Monty and half something very, like, somber. And it never really, like, I feel like I don't know what happened. I feel like either it was originally something quite unusual and then they decided to try and Full Monty it, or it was just got caught somewhere in between. Here's what I wrote about it. I wrote, an odd mix of expected and then just strange. Structurally, it was quite strange too. Not a lot of story arcs paid off in the expected way. They recruit, as a group, Rafe Fiennes, who's just come back from Germany, having spent a lot of time out there with other conductors and composers, and he's sort of, I suppose he would be like considered the most pacifist of the group. He's speaking German still. Everyone is horrified by it, you know, but he's such a talent that they want him to run the choir. And there are these strange little stories all dotted throughout. One, for example, being that one of the girls who joins the choir, her boyfriend is missing in action. He's been, you know, they're both very young. He's been at war. He's missing in action. Everyone knows he's dead, and she's still not admitting it. But she meets another boy in the choir, and they get together, and they, you know, it starts off as quite a nice story. Then her boyfriend comes back halfway through the film. He turns into one of the main characters who also joins the choir and is terrific. It's about 5 different films all in one. I don't think it's really a success. And yet within it, there are these bizarre, sometimes unsettling, some very surprisingly unsettling for what the film, what you think the film is. And sometimes very, very moving scenes. You know, Rafe Fiennes is obviously like, absolutely outstanding in everything. Like, give him a little monologue and he just knocks it out of the park. So I wouldn't recommend people go and see this in the cinema, but I would say, if you're curious, when it comes out on streaming, if it does, watch it. I just would love to hear what other people think. I don't know anyone else that's gone to see it, so I'd be curious to talk to someone about it at some point, because it's just weird.
It's for old people. It's for the silver pound. You know, I don't want to be dismissive of them, but that's...
Yeah,
know.
I think it probably is, but there's a lot in there that, like, that's more than that. There's a scene, this is a spoiler, but there's a scene where the girl whose boyfriend had gone missing and was presumed dead is now sad because her new boyfriend, who was the 17-year-old, he's turned 18, he's gone to war. So she's now been left twice by her boyfriends. And she sat on a hillside in the mountains with her old boyfriend, who was presumed dead but has come back. This is after the scene where he's realised that she's moved on. It's all very heartbreaking. It's very sad. He's lost an arm. Like, he was injured. He lost an arm. He's come back with one arm.
Yeah, there we go. Late to tell. No wonder she said, I've moved on.
Well,
she took one look at him.
Yeah. And so
this new guy's got 2 arms. Sorry. How many arms have you got?
Just the one. Yeah.
Oh, that's embarrassing.
Exactly. Move on. Now, you know, you'll know where I'm going with this straight away, Adam. He's a right-handed man and he's lost his right hand. So what can't he do?
Cup her breast.
He can't masturbate successfully. And she's sad because her new boyfriend has just gone to war and they're sat together and he's comforting her. So what does he do? He asks her...
to tug him off.
Yeah. And she doesn't really want to. But he sort of guilts her into it. And then she does it. That's a scene in the film. That's never resolved. Their storylines don't... like that. You never come back to that. You never find out whether her new boyfriend comes back. So when you say it's a film for the Silver Pound, in some ways it is. That's what I'm saying. One of the five films that this is a film for the Silver Pound. Another one is a psychotic, bizarre, strange, I'm sure touching on something very real, but still like unpleasant to watch. And
yeah, we all want a hand job. That's touching on something very real.
When was the last time you heard from your father?
Daddy. I can't believe you got to see Running Man.
Well,
in front of me, I was like, the trailer for that flick has been so, it's so bad, the trailers and the posters.
I've never seen them.
I probably should have not. You know, it's never good to see a trailer, but the idea that the film looks so cheap,
right?
It looks so cheap from the trailers, and you're kind of thinking, oh, this is Edgar Wright. And he's got a big old budget, and he can just make a action flick.
$110 million.
That's an obscene amount of money, and it looks. I mean, it looks really cheap for $110 million. It looks like it costs $60 million. Do I go and see this at the cinema?
Yes.
Ooh.
So I'll tell. I'm not going to spoil anything for this one because this. I saw this weekend with my wife. I think it's only just come out. So maybe when people are listening to this, it will still be relatively fresh. All I'll say is that I had heard from a couple of people, and I'd seen a lot of chatter online about this film, that it wasn't very good or that it was a bit disappointing. I can only assume that that is because people hold Edgar Wright in such high esteem that they were expecting something incredible, which the film is not. But myself and my wife, who does not normally go and see films like this, I sort of encouraged her to come along. We turned to each other at one point in the screen, because I'd said to her, like, oh, I've heard it's not very good. We turned to each other halfway through the film and said, this is really good.
Ooh, I love it. I love to hear
that.
That's
all I'll say.
That's all I'll
say.